All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, America. Welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 Type Warrant Officer, helicopter pilot, Republic of Vietnam, 1969. I am honored today to be the host of Veterans Radio. We're going to be talking with a number of people. We're going to be talking with Bill Villano from the Veterans History Project. That's right, all you people out there that don't record your stories, we're going to be on you again to get those stories recorded. And later on in the program, we've got our genuine World War II veteran, John Anderson, is going to be on the program talking about his experiences of being a waste gunner on a B-17, flew 22 missions over Europe, came back alive. That's the best part of the story. And so he's got a lot of little interesting things that we're going to be chatting about in just a little while. We've got a couple of events that are coming up, and I wanted to get those out to you right away. Number one is that on the 16th, of July, the Michigan Memorial Vietnam Wall will be arriving in Saginaw, Michigan at 10 a.m. at the American Legion Post 439 at 5190 White Street, Saginaw Township, 10 o'clock in the morning. The Michigan Memorial Vietnam Wall is sponsored by Chapter 154, the Vietnam Veterans of America of Mount Clemens. I think this is a great opportunity for those of you who have never seen the wall before to take a look at it. It says that the wall is going to be escorted by motorcycles and police following a blessing of the bikes and a dove release. It's kind of cool. I might have to get up there myself. So July 16th, 10 o'clock, the Michigan Memorial Vietnam Wall will be arriving at the American Legion Post 439 on White Street in Saginaw Township. If you need any more information and you'd like to find out more about it, you can give Sydney Thompson a call. She is at 989-792-1369. That's 989-792-1369. And I believe that Cindy is the one that's trying to call my cell phone right now. So I'm going to ask if Cindy, if you are listening, you can call the station direct at 734-822-1600. 734-822-1600. I think that's a pretty good plug for you guys. Anyway, the other thing going on is downtown Detroit. Yeah, I'm going downtown Detroit. We all go downtown Detroit. But the United States Chamber of Commerce is sponsoring a Hiring Our Heroes program on this coming Friday, July 15th, at Comerica Park in Detroit from 11 until 2 p.m. It says, join us for a one-of-a-kind event featuring a hiring fair, networking opportunities, and workshops tailored for veteran job seekers, active-duty military members, Guard and Reserve members, and military spouses. All registered veterans and their military spouses are eligible to receive up to 2 free tickets for the game that night against the Royals. Sounds pretty neat to me. So go to hiringourheroes.org. That's hiringourheroes.org for more information. Registration starts at 9 a.m. There's an employment workshop that goes from 9:30 till 11, opening ceremony, the hiring fair, and then there's the game at night. I think that's really exciting. So all of you heroes out there, and that's what you are to all of us who are here at home, are to us. So it's Detroit Hiring Expo with the Detroit Tigers, Friday, July 15th, from 9:30 until 2, Comerica Park. You know where it is. And for more information, you go to uschamberfoundation.org/hiringourheroes/FAQ for frequently answered questions. But just go, Hiring Our Heroes. You could just find it on the Internet. Very easy for you to do that. The other thing I wanted to mention, finally, is the Thunder Over Michigan. Dun, dun, dun. It's coming up here very shortly in August, but today is the deadline to order your tickets ahead of time. So you need to go to the YankeeAirMuseum.org and click on there, and it'll have all the information that you need about the Thunder Over Michigan. There's all kinds of airplanes that are going to be there. There's helicopters there. There's war battle reenactments and so forth. It's going to be a great opportunity for you. It's, I believe, and I'll get back to you with the correct dates, but I believe it's August 21st and 22nd. It's a Saturday and Sunday, And I know I'm going to be out there because I've got helicopters. So if there's always helicopters, that's where I want to be. And I've got some Hueys, OH-6s, Loaches for you guys from the Vietnam era, a Cobra, some of these other ancient aircraft now that we're that we used to fly around in are going to be there. So check out that opportunity because today is the last day for you to get the discount on the prices. I think it's 10 bucks off if you go to the yankeeairmuseum.org. And up till midnight tonight, you can get 10 bucks off the tickets. Plus, there's the explanation of all the different things that are going on. They've got different levels of seats that you can get, parking, everything. It's always a great opportunity for you to see what's going on in the world of aviation. And make sure you bring your earplugs with you because you're going to need them. So that's coming up in August. And we'll be talking more about that as we go along. But now... I'm going to introduce my first guest, and this is Bill Villano, and Bill is a participant. I don't know if he's a member of or how he works this whole thing out, but he's part of the Veterans History Project and on a local level, and Bill has been recording the stories of Washtenaw County veterans for how long?
Just a little over 10 years now.
Okay. Yep. So if you just pull that microphone up to you a little bit.
Sure.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So tell me about the Veterans History Project and what it is.
The project was started in the year 2000 by Congress, and the Library of Congress is the recipient of these interviews, if you will. The mission of the program was to collect and preserve these personal accounts of veterans of all wars. So that they would have a personal accounting for future generations. Now, locally, we got involved in it in 2004, and sponsored by the local Rotary Club, the Ypsilanti Rotary Club.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to know how or why we got involved.
The Rotary Club gets involved in a lot of great activities, and they're really coming forward with a lot of veterans activities that they're becoming involved with.
Yeah. What happened was that a professor of history at Eastern Michigan University called me because I knew him. He knew me and said, how would Rotary like to get involved in a veterans program? I said, oh, sure. Not knowing much about what it was. But then, we had to get some equipment, and you don't get that equipment from the federal government. You have to find a way of getting your own cameras and so on. So anyhow, make a long story short, we wrote a few grants and kicked off our program. What we do locally is we either have the veteran come in to a place like the library, Ipsy Library, or we go to their home, and most of the time we go to the veteran's home and do our video recording there. When we get that recording, we don't edit it. Translate it, transcribe it into DVDs. We give them to the veteran, as many or as few as they want. We send a DVD off to the Library of Congress. We also have a local website where we store these videos so that people can access these interviews very easily by going into this local website. The Library of Congress is very good, except that I was talking with somebody there just a week or so ago. They have hundreds of thousands of interviews, and they only can put a few hundred up on the website. So the chances of having an interview on that individual is pretty slim.
In the short term, right.
Yeah.
So where would we go? So are you just recording them all in Washtenaw County, or is it kind of within a radius of the area? Or what?
Well, any place that I can travel.
I know you've been very bulldogged about it, getting out there to as many people as you can. Yeah. I know that we did a number of recordings one time over at Eastern during a veterans program.
There are a number of programs even throughout Michigan, and you know, they're it's possible to get recorded no matter where you live in Michigan. But it's
so if I wanted to do my own recording, or if my dad were around and I wanted to get him recorded, how would I get a hold of you?
Well, that's the thing. If
that's a good question.
I guess I'm known as the coordinator of the Veterans History Project locally, and people can get to me by email, which is wmjv@ymail.com. It's Y, yes.
Just Y? Or y letter mail, Y?
Y mail. No, it's
Y as in why not?
It's the letter Y.
Oh, ymail.com,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, now I got it.
They can call me. I'm at 734-973-2536.
2536.
Yeah.
So it's WMJV.
At Ymail.
At Ymail, the letter Y, the word mail, .com.
Yeah.
Or call Bill at 734-973-2536.
Right.
Correct? And then you'll come running out with your entire studio.
Absolutely, with my trusty camera.
And as you mentioned, though, the people, the veteran who is interviewed can get as many copies as he wants.
As many or as few. I've had requests for as few as 2 and as many as 22. So if you come anywhere in between those two, you're
got good.
It made, right?
You're good. All right.
I'm not sure we can go beyond 22. But seriously, we can do any number.
And I know that these are available in the Library of Congress, because I looked up a couple of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of the veterans organizations also will keep copies of these interviews in their own on their own websites.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a member of the American Legion or the VFW, I know the VVA 310 in Ann Arbor has everybody's story on their website.
Yeah, VVA has a link into our website,
and
VVA 310.
Okay. And where is if I'm looking to get at it at the library, how do I get a hold of, or how do I find them?
At the Library of Congress
or here, locally?
We're at, it's all one word, Ypsilanti Historical Society.
Ypsilanti Historical Society.
Society, yes. .org.
Holy moly. All right.
Okay.
YpsilantiHistoricalSociety.org, and they can find their way through there
and look
for people
that
have been there.
Yeah, we've done a number of them throughout the years, and they do them at the Veterans Hospital. We started at the Veterans Hospital, but now they have their own program, and we've done some spectacular people like Charlie Kittles, who you know.
I did want to, I guess we can jump right to that.
Yeah.
Then, so... for those of you that are listening in the Washtenaw County area, we have a gentleman who is on his way to Washington next Monday on the 18th.
Next Monday.
To receive his Medal of Honor. And this is Lieutenant Colonel Charlie Kettles.
Right.
And he his Medal of Honor is an upgrade. He received a Distinguished Service Cross for his actions in Vietnam in 1967, I believe it was, when he saved a whole lot of people.
Absolutely.
Put it this way. He was... he went through a lot of aircraft on that day, and he took off, he thought, for the last time on his mission, found out that there were 8 more people still in the landing zone, turned right around without hesitating, and went in and picked them up. And for all you helicopter pilots out there, you know, kind of bounced his way off the landing zone because he was way overweight. And as Charlie would say himself, he said, he pulled pitch and said a prayer and bounced his way out of that LZ and brought them all home safely, with many holes in his aircraft, including no windshield or chin bubble.
Right.
And so he's being, I have to use the word, rewarded for his actions at that time. And as we all know, that nobody wins a Medal of Honor. Mm. It's something that you receive, and that, as Charlie has told us many times, it's not his. It's everybody that was there, and especially it's the men and women that didn't come back.
Right.
Every single Medal of Honor recipient that we have talked to has been so humble in their own way. And it's an added thing to their lifestyle, because now everybody looks at them. They have a certain way they have to live their lives.
Yeah.
And I think it's I can't wait to get Charlie back on. You mentioned that earlier when we were talking that there is going to be a little celebration.
Yes.
When he gets back. So
right.
When can you fill us in on that, and we'll get more information later?
Well, it's going to be the 13th of August, and it's going to be at the Yankee Air Museum. So we're going to have a community celebration for Charlie, too.
All right.
Yeah. And, of course, as you mentioned, I've always described Charlie as the most low-key guy I ever met. Just unbelievable.
I know. It's nothing wrong. You know, it's just that if you ever looked at him, you'd say, he did what? Just a very, honorable man. And I think that's the best way I can say about him. You know, he obviously was very trusted by his pilots in his own company. He did two tours in Vietnam, and I can't imagine anybody doing more than one. So I always have that admiration for him anyway. And now to receive this honor, I think is great because he's getting up there. And it's about time.
Yeah, he's, I don't know if you want me to tell his age.
Well, we don't want to tell his age, okay. We know. He's in there somewhere.
He's older than I am.
He's older than you are, and he's younger than our guest later on.
Right.
So he's someplace in between. Let's just do it that way. I can tell you this. Charlie was drafted for the Korean War, so go from there. and figure it out. Well, Bill, thank you very much for being on the program. I'm going to ask you to stay in the studio. Bill Villano, Veterans History Project. If you want to get a hold of him and record your own story or get your uncle or your dad or whoever's out there that hasn't told their story to anybody, you can contact him by email at wmjv@ymail.com, or you can give him a call at 734-973-2536. All right? So there. All right. We're going to take a real quick break, and we will be back with John Anderson. We're going to find out what these B-17 gunners did when they were up there. You're listening to Veterans Radio. If you want to get a hold of us, I forgot to give you our number, 734-822-1600. We'll be right back. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and so some of you out there might recognize that music. It's a little dated for some of you also. We understand that. But we're going to be talking with a World War II veteran here, and his name is John Anderson. And John is from Iowa originally and grew up here in the local area in Saline, went off to war, came back, lived in Ann Arbor the remainder of his life. Actually, he lives around the corner from me here in Ann Arbor, which is kind of exciting. And I have to tell you how I heard about John. You know, some people think that Ann Arbor is a big metropolitan city and all this other stuff. Well, I met John because of my barber, and that's Tom Cerna. The hair spot. There, Tom, you owe me $50. Anyway, the hair spot up on Maple Road, where we've been going for three generations, and it sounds like a number of other generations have been going there forever, too. So Tom says, you got to talk to this guy. I was talking to him. He's in B-17 and all these other things. And so he made the connection and made the introduction to his daughter, Susan. And Susan is joining us in the studio. And right now I want to bring John on. So John Anderson, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I know you are glad to be here. It's great to be anywhere, right?
Yeah. I'm here to satisfy my daughter.
Well, you know.
No.
This is great. So John, when we were talking, I finally met John a couple of days ago, and he was over coffee, and he says, I don't have any stories to tell, and so on and so forth. And I think about an hour and a half later, we came out with a couple of stories that we had never heard before. This is kind of interesting, always fascinating to me. So, John, tell me, you joined the service from Saline?
Yes.
Right? Tell me about how you got involved.
Well, in June, I graduated from high school.
June of what year?
I turned 18 in January.
January of 1943.
Right.
Right, okay.
Well, then I was subject to the draft, but they let me finish high school, and then they drafted me in the Army.
And
they had me in the Army, I think it was June.
Okay. Do you remember where did you do basic training?
Well, my basic training was in Miami, Florida, but I had been accepted for the one program they had for Army cadets to be flyers.
So you're going to be a pilot.
Yes, be pilots.
And so you did get to fly.
Oh yeah, but not much.
I know, but how long into your training did you get to go?
Just the first phase of it. I mean, really didn't amount to anything. If I'd have been lucky enough to stay, then I would have gotten into bigger aircraft and would have a lot more flying.
I would guess so. So you went. They ended the program. They ended the cadet program.
Well, they had too many pilots.
Okay. So.
Then, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but so what happened was that the Army Air Corps ended up having too many pilots and probably not enough planes and pilots to mix them all up. So your cadet program was canceled.
Right.
And where did you end up?
As an aerial gunner, which I didn't object to.
That's good. That's good.
No. Then they started training me as an aerial gunner.
All right. And so where did you do that training?
Well, Kingman, Arizona, one of the most lovely spots in the country. At the time, I think at the time there were about 10,000 people in Kingman.
Okay. Well, you know, and
I imagine now it's a large,
probably is a large city.
Yeah, big city.
I think the other thing, of course, is there's not a whole lot of people out there that, you know, when you're test firing all your weapons and stuff to get in the way.
Well, no. I don't think that was the case. They didn't have to worry about people.
That's true. So did you, in your training as a gunner, did you were you right away into B-17s or is it, did they have?
No, they assigned me after you finish gunnery school. Then you're assigned to a company or a squad.
Mm-hmm. What did you do? What kind of weapons did you learn how to use in gunnery school? Was it
50 caliber machine gun?
Okay. For our civilians out there, a 50 caliber shell is what, about 6 inches long?
Oh yeah, that's a good sized shell.
Right. It makes a big hole.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. All right. So you completed your training. You turned out to be an excellent gunner, right?
Well, suppose. Hopefully.
Okay.
I did. I got through the war. If that's
obviously,
I muddled through that. Listen,
okay. This is why I love doing our show, folks. All right, so you get through gunnery school. Did they send you to Europe right away?
Not till you've trained. I mean, you trained as a crew on that beef.
B-17?
B-17.
Okay.
You train together as a crew, and then they ship you over as a crew.
I got you.
As a crew.
Where did you guys all get together to become a crew?
Well, I think it was Gulfport, Mississippi was the main staging area where we trained for, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and then, I think when we shipped out, we went to, left the States at Bangor, Maine, somewhere in there.
Okay. And how old were you at that time?
Well, I was about 18.
How old was your pilot?
I think he was he was 24, but the oldest man on the plane was the tail gunner. I think he was 27.
Right. And you were you the youngest?
Well, no, the radio man was the youngest.
How old was he?
Well, just within a year,
okay.
A few months, not a...
Okay.
But they were all young. I mean, they weren't any old men on the,
No, I can understand that.
Yeah.
So we've got about a minute till we're going to take a break here. So did you fly over to England, or did you?
Yes.
You did?
We flew a plane over there. I think they needed a plane, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, I think we landed in Iceland. Or Newfoundland. I can't recall. There was a couple. I think it was Iceland.
Okay.
And then we hit England.
All right. And was that your plane, or did or
no?
Was
no. It? Then we picked up a plane when we were assigned to a squadron.
Okay. And where were you stationed in England when you got there?
Well, it was the name of the. It was just Kettering, England. Is all I can tell you. I didn't. The bases were could be anywhere. I mean, England was swamped for space.
So you guys
you
were,
well know.
So you were out in the country and.
Well, I was right on the farm. So.
That's right. You mentioned that. Did you were right on the farm?
And the squadron was right there on the.
Okay. Well, we can hear the music coming up. So, as Bob would always say, the Veterans Radio Orchestra is tuning up. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll gather our thoughts. We're going to start doing some flying over Europe here when we get back after the news and so forth. All righty. So when you get back. Anybody out there, if you'd like to give us a call, you can do that, 734-822-1600. And you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back after the news. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and as the music implies, we're back at World War II also. I wonder, we're talking with John Anderson, who is a waist gunner, door gunner on a B-17 in England in 1944. You arrived there. And I was just thinking as I was listening to that song, did you ever get to go into town in any of these canteens and dance with the English girls or any of those things? He's not admitting it. His face, you can see that he's going, I'm not telling. did you go into town at all?
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned something about it the other day.
Well, I think everybody wanted to go to London. I think I went to London once, but that really wasn't a good leave town. So there are other towns that were.
Friendlier?
Friendlier. No, I had a good time in England.
Did you?
I'm parts of it.
You mentioned that when you went into the pubs, you know, you could get a beer.
Well, I think they had shortages there just like they did here, but I think they'd start drinking beer, and then about 2 in the afternoon, they'd throw a towel on over all the spigots and say the towel's on, that's it, no more beer. So
really, the towel's on?
Yeah.
Right. And the beer was warm?
Yeah, warm beer. But
oh, I can do that.
It was drinkable, I mean.
Again, you're 19, 18, 19 years old. Anything is drinkable at that age.
They didn't care. I mean, no, that wasn't that wasn't the problem.
I realize that. I'm not trying to get anybody into trouble here.
No, you aren't.
Okay. All right. So, can you describe how you lived while you were there? Did you live in tents or did you live in
huts? No, we had a Quonset hut. Then actually the whole camp, I mean the mess hall would be one area of this farm, and the landing field would be in it was all scattered over this in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But, it wasn't all compact in one building. But, I mean, just like when you're up to fly, you had to go. There's another building that they briefed everybody before you took off on a mission.
What time did you get up for your missions? Do you remember?
Well, it'd be real early in the morning. You didn't... You didn't have time to eat breakfast you wouldn't. Nobody got up before time anyway. I mean, they would wake you up when the time was to go, and that was it. I mean,
right. So when you got onto your B-17, What kind of uniform did you wear? Was it just overalls or?
No. I usually had an electric suit that because up in altitude it got pretty cold. I mean,
well, if you're going at 30,000 feet, is that the highest you went?
Well, 30,000 or that would be a normal bomb height. I mean,
so it's really cold.
Oh, definitely.
So you had an electric suit that you would wear?
I just plugged it into the outlet, same way with the oxygen.
Wow. So how warm did it keep you warm?
No, it kept me warm, which is which I was thankful for.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And you said that on the B-17, when you took off, you didn't take off and fly straight to Europe. You took off
They would form the group or the formation, and then they fly formation to the target. That's why in daylight bombing, that's why the English said that you could never daylight bomb Germany, but they always bombed at night, and with a tight formation, you'd have more firepower, according to the generals.
And the powers that be, right?
Yeah, right. Yes. And then that's why they felt they could daylight bomb Germany.
All right. How many planes?
There were 36 in a group.
36?
In a formation.
Okay.
And the English didn't. They bombed at night. I mean, I know we'd be going in the morning and then coming back. Occasionally, you'd see them coming in to the.
Okay.
And it'd be just like a big swarm of bees. They never flew any formation.
They didn't fly in formation.
No.
Like you.
It was just a bunch of planes in a group going down.
You mentioned that when you first got there that your escort planes couldn't fly with you
luckily I wasn't when they first started daylight bombing Germany. I was lucky I wasn't there because the losses were great.
Right, astronomical.
I mean, but then they didn't have any fighter protection was why they were knocking so many planes down. But I think they improved the fighters. They improved the range that they didn't have the range that the bombers had. I think with wing tanks and like that, then they obtained fighter protection, which really helped in combating the Germans.
How much you mentioned that the other day that because of the external tanks that the escorts could fly all the way to the mission and back with you.
The mission. They naturally is a. As the poor people on the ground made advancements, I mean, they got in further into Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then your bomb runs
had to go.
Well, not necessarily, but I mean, they would have the targets seem to be deeper.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of targets did you go after?
Well, normally oil was the big, mm-hmm. right at the time, was seemed to be a popular place to bomb.
That's right. So you weren't in, and you mentioned the other day also that you bombed like ball bearing plants and manufacturing.
Well, yeah, any
plants.
Manufacturing, but
not cities, per se. You weren't involved in Dresden or any of that stuff.
No, right? But some of these though were in cities. Mm-hmm. Leipzig was a member. I remember that was a hot target. There must have been a lot of manufacturing. I mean, in that city, you know.
Right, in the city, actually.
Right.
Okay. So it was unavoidable.
Right. Well, you never really bombed Berlin. I mean, that would be a long haul anyway. I mean, to go to Berlin and back.
What was it like to get shot at up there? Did you ever have any flak go off nearby?
Oh, you could say. What you couldn't see was, no, you could always see the flak. it would be just black bursts, I mean, right outside the plane.
So is it sort of like lightning going off? Or
no, just a puff of black smoke. Oh, the ones you couldn't see is the ones you didn't want.
Well, you're right. Yeah, that's like anybody. And if you can't see it, it's too late.
No, no. Flak was a big item that we had to combat. I mean, the fighters were, you'd see them occasionally, but we didn't have the fighters like they encountered when they first started bombing Germany.
Oh, okay.
I'm just thankful.
The German fighters coming
right,
after you.
Right.
That's a good question. So who on the B-17 had the best opportunity of shooting down
plane? Anybody that shot down a plane is just be luck, because that plane is moving and you're moving. And I know that we had a couple of the ball turret and the top turret. They had gun sights that they could track a plane, you didn't have a blind spot on that bomber. I mean, it always had a gun position.
Okay, so you guys all overlapped.
Oh yeah,
each other?
They were all over. But I said that anybody that shot down a plane is
lucky.
Lucky.
Well, I would think, because you're bouncing around a lot.
Well, yeah, definitely.
And you're bouncing around a lot.
The only one who really had a good straight shot at them was the tail gunner, because they'd be coming, if they're coming in that position.
We, my partner and I, Bob, used to go to lunch up in, I think it was at Rochester, and there was a group up there called Flyboys, and they would meet once a month, and most of all of them were involved in B-17, 24, 29s, and so forth. And one time, this really tall guy came to the luncheon, and he's an older gentleman. You know, he got up, "Hi, what were you doing?" I flew in, I forget what he said, which plane it was exactly, but what were you? He says, "Oh, I was in the ball turret." You know, we go,
you
can't fit in there.
No, a ball turret gunner usually was a smaller individual. I couldn't. I was about 6 foot then, and if I got in the ball turret, my feet would be right over the gun sight.
Right.
I mean,
you wouldn't be able to get out.
No. Well, he couldn't. I wouldn't have been. What good would I have done? I couldn't.
Right.
All I could do maybe was run the thing, but I couldn't point the gun or the.
How much space did you have on the B-17 to move around in?
Well, in the waist, you had a lot of space, but you didn't. The other positions, you didn't. I mean, the nose and the top turret. The top turret was right behind the pilots. The nose was naturally by the bombardier. And then you come back through the plane. There was a bomb bay, then the radio room, then the waist. The ball turret was right in. I could see the waist. I mean the bomb. I could see the ball turret was right in the waist.
Okay.
I mean that's.
Was he below?
Yeah.
Below.
The waist gunner, he couldn't get in that ball turret till you were airborne.
Oh.
Because he had to elevate the guns. But then once you got airborne, you could rotate the ball turret so that the guns were down, you hatch it open, and then
he would go in.
He could get in it.
Okay. So you were right behind the bomb.
I was right by the ball turret.
Okay.
So naturally, they were always the ones complaining about being in a ball turret. But
I can't imagine. It'd be like.
It wasn't that bad. I mean.
Yeah, because you weren't in it, right?
Well.
It'd be like one of those hotels, you know, that have the see-through elevators that you go up and you know, you're just kind of looking down at everybody and he's stuck in there.
Well, you're stuck there. You can see everything on the bottom of that plane.
That's true. So when you would make a bomb run, what did it feel like in the airplane itself when the bombs were dropped?
Well, they didn't feel anything. You just that's one thing on the bomb run. They didn't deviate. Nothing that plane would not deviate from anything. That group, when it was on the on the bomb run, which would last maybe 8 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it all would all depend, but on that, in that part of the mission, it would, you couldn't move. I mean, you didn't do anything. No evasive action or.
So the pilots were on the controls.
Right. He really stayed right on that when you're on that bomb run.
I guess I always imagined that when the bombs went away, that the plane would want to naturally.
Well, I don't think it was that. I didn't notice anything like that. I know some of those bombs are, they're probably still going off now. The Mount.
You mentioned that you found them, or that they're still finding them over there.
Well, sure. Germany's have, they've got a problem
mm-hmm.
with the. I mean, if you buy a piece of property there, because some of those bombs, they didn't go off, and they could be going off.
Well, there are so many bombs around the world that have been, you know, that did not explode that I'm sure that they'll be going off.
Well, they
off
were
forever.
Blessed with a lot of them. I mean.
Yeah, they were. I need to take a break, John, sure. So I'm going to ask you to hold on to that thought. We're going to come back, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about when you came home and what it was like when you came home. I got to do a little live commercial read
sure.
here, so we're going to do that. Seeing you in all those familiar places. How many million men and women came home in 1945 listening to that song, or their spouses were at home singing that song? On our program today, we have been talking with John Anderson, a B-17 waste gunner, and we found out what it's like to be on a B-17. John flew 22 missions. Ever anything bad happen while you were on a mission?
No.
That's,
no, I mean...
That's a good way to put it, yes. You mentioned that it was 36 ships or aircraft in a formation. Did any of them ever get shot down around you or anything?
Well, not. They'd get hit,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't see any of them blowing up in that group. I mean...
That was very fortunate. That was good.
Yeah, right. No, I was blessed. I mean, I was lucky.
All right, so now you've done your 22 missions. Normally it's 25, but the war ends.
Right.
And
which I didn't argue with.
That's a good point. Good point. So they send you back home. And again, you said that you flew home.
Right.
You didn't take one of those troop ships.
No. I was lucky there. I mean.
Where did you fly to?
I can't recall when I came home. Isn't that awful?
Right. So you ended up at, let's go and tell that little story that we talked about
and
earlier.
When I was in Vegas?
Yeah,
I was there. I was in Las Vegas for, I can't recall what for, but I got one furlough out of Las Vegas.
Right.
And at that time, everything was on the railroad. I mean, when you got a furlough, you went home on a train.
Mm-hmm.
And the railroad, any train that had anything that had wheels on it, they put on the tracks. So you got a lot of dirty trains and. But anyway, this one furlough, I think I had 11 cents in my pocket. And from Vegas to Ann Arbor, and one stop that we made in Hastings, Nebraska, I'll never forget it, because the amount of food when that train made the stop there, they had that canteen that the people in that town met each train that stopped there and fed a serviceman. I could not believe the amount of food.
You mentioned that this just wasn't a sandwich.
No.
This was.
And luckily, I mean, I really welcomed it because I didn't have a lot of money.
11 cents isn't going to do a lot even then.
Then, so that really stuck in my mind all these years, Hastings, Nebraska. Well, one day in church, it might have been a year or so ago, that as you leave, everybody stops and talks to the minister. Well, I overheard these people ahead of me mention Hastings, Nebraska. Right away, I jumped up and I said, "Are you from Hastings?" And I kept talking to them through the conversation. There was a lady, a wonderful lady there, that she lived in Hastings at that time. She moved to, she was an elderly lady, but she moved to Ann Arbor, after the war, years ago. Anyway, I became acquainted with her, and we related about the canteens and all that, but she just had 100th birthday.
Wow. Just happy birthday.
Yeah, just a couple of weeks ago. She's in better shape than I think. She's an amazing person.
And she had memories of going down to the train and.
Right. She took part in that when she lived there. Most of her life she lived in Hastings. I think her daughter moved up here, and
that's how she got
her up here. But
well, after the war, what was it like when you came home from the war? Were there parades or parties, or did you just go right to work?
Well, we're right to work. I mean, then I went back to the job I had, which was it was a gas station. I could have gone to on that GI Bill. I had both of my brothers got degrees from on the GI Bill, but I didn't take part of that. I joined the Ann Arbor Fire Department. I was working in the gas station. I heard about the fire department, so I applied there and was accepted there.
Oh, okay. Well, you mentioned earlier when we had coffee the other day that to get back to Saline, where you grew up, you had to hitchhike from Indiana somewhere.
Oh, yeah, but that was nothing. I could have taken a bus or something.
Yeah, but you'd have to wait for the bus, right?
Yeah, I didn't. I just went out on the highway and started.
Did you get a ride right away?
Right? Yeah. It didn't. And within reason, I didn't. I wasn't there all night.
No, I understand that. So you hitchhiked right to your house in Saline?
Right to Saline.
How did your parents react when you showed up?
I can't recall.
I'm hoping they were surprised.
Yeah, I guess so.
What was your mother's specialty when she cooked?
Fried chicken. But then that was, now wait a minute. That's when you raise chickens.
Oh, okay.
And they were fried different. Or she did.
Oh, okay. But there was excellent still.
Oh, yeah. It was all together.
I just wanted to remember that. When I first got home, my mom. When I finally saw my mom, she made her specialty, you know, and it was just excellent. It was better than it ever tasted before, mainly because we didn't get to eat anything. So you were with the Ann Arbor Fire Department for 28 years.
Yeah, but I left there. I was 48 when I left. I mean,
you still had to work. We only got a couple of minutes left. That's why I'm trying.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to tell you, you worked as a tinsmith.
Well, I learned some of that when I was in the fire department.
Okay. And then you worked with putting copper on them around these fancy homes in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, it's still there. Some of those homes are still got those copper roofs.
I know. I'm going to have to go on some missions and find those. Well, I think it's amazing. John, I want to thank you so very much for being on our program. I think everything went really well. And I'm looking forward to when I go walking around my neighborhood stopping by.
Good.
And say, hey.
Yeah, I'll be there.
For a long time.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Well, I'm going out feet first. When I leave that place.
I understand that. Thank you. And I want to thank you, your daughter, Sue, for being here with us. I'm sorry we didn't get you on the air, but that's okay. Maybe we should track down our 100-year-old Hastings, Nebraska woman and see what it was like to do that.
Oh, she's something.
I think Bill should probably talk to her. We've been talking with Bill Villano today from the Veterans History Project. Folks, this is what we mean by telling your stories. Doesn't have to be on a radio program. It could be in your living room. You know, talk to your grandfather, talk to your dad, talk to your uncle, whoever it is. If you can get him to tell his stories or her stories, because there's a lot more women veterans than there used to be, just put a little recorder down there, give them a cup of coffee, and let them go. They'll tell you what they want to tell you. It's been a pleasure today. You can listen to Veterans Radio on our website, on our archives, on our podcast. You want to find out what's going on with the VA and their new laws, you need to check out our podcast. Those are on there. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio LLC. And we're going to listen to the theme a little bit, but until next week, you are dismissed.
Thank you.